Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're responding to the objections often raised against the Christian faith by atheists, agnostics, and skeptics. Ron Rhodes is our guest. We're going to go to your phone calls, to your emails as quickly as we possibly can. We are a live call-in program, 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Ron Rhodes is a regular guest, president of Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries, based in Frisco, Texas, and he's author of several books, including his latest, Answering the Objections of Atheists, Agnostics, and Skeptics. Ron, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
All right, let's deal with a couple other objections real quick here, if we could. And these are very common. What about this one? Look, you Christians are simply arrogant and intolerant. You say that Jesus is the only way of salvation, and that is an intolerant view.
Well, I hear that all the time. In fact, I was talking to Lee Strobel about this, and you know that Lee used to be an atheist himself before he became a Christian. And even he commented that when he was an atheist, he used to bristle at assertions by Christians that they somehow held a monopoly on the only correct approach to religion. And he'd often think to himself, you know, who do they think they are? Well, the fact is that on the one hand, Jesus is the only way. In fact, he claimed to be the only way in John 14, verse 6. And a bold Peter likewise said in Acts 4:12 that salvation is found in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven by which man can be saved. But here's something to keep in mind. Even though the way of salvation is narrow, God's heart is wide open. He loves white people and black people, rich people and poor people, fat people and thin people, males and females. He loves them all so much that he makes available to each and every one of them the same wonderful gift of salvation in Jesus Christ. He doesn't show partiality with anyone. He offers everybody the exact same gift. And another thing to keep in mind is that just because something is narrow does not mean it is bad. For example, when I fly to Dallas, I want that guy, the pilot, to land on that one and only correct runway in Dallas. Sometimes there's only one road out of a forest. Sometimes there's only one operation that can save your life. There's only one correct formula for Pepsi. I want my wife, Kara, to be faithful to her one and only husband for the rest of her life. Those things are narrow, but they're not bad. And in the same way, I don't think that we should say that God's narrow way of salvation is bad, because he's giving the same wonderful gift to everyone, or at least he offers it to everyone who believes.
What about the other picture that is painted of Christians? And this has to do with the fact that, well, you Christians don't know your own history. Don't you know about the Crusades? The Inquisitions? Don't you know about corrupt church leaders and corrupt church organizations, both past and present? Christianity hasn't been that good all the time.
Well, you know, we have to confess where we've been wrong. It's true that what took place in the Crusades was unconscionable, but let's not forget that what those Christians did in the Crusades did not do what they did because of any commandment of Jesus Christ, but rather they, in fact, went against the commandments of Jesus Christ in what they did. You might remember, for example, that when Jesus was talking to Peter, he told Peter that people that live by the sword will die by the sword, and he told Peter to put the sword away and stop attacking the Romans. I think in the same way, what happened in the Crusades was a violation of Christ's own ethic. Having said that, let's recognize that Christian history has, by and large, been an exemplary history where Christians have done wonderful things. You know, I don't think an atheist would appreciate it if I took one single atheist out of the millions of atheists out there and picked this one particular atheist because he was an axe killer in Texas or something like that, as if he were a typical atheist. In the same way, it would be wrong for an atheist to pick the Crusades and act as if that's somehow typical of Christians or Christianity, you know, especially when you look at the missionaries who have done tremendous good in various parts of the world. I think that the history of Christianity has been overall an exemplary one.
Ron, you know that Paul, in one of his epistles, says that the Christian faith is very readily falsifiable if Christ has not been raised. He says if Christ has not been raised, then what we believe is empty and hollow and isn't worth believing. And the skeptic and the atheist and the agnostic have taken a couple cracks at falsifying the resurrection of Jesus Christ. They offer alternate explanations for what happened. Let's take a couple of them one at a time. First of all, the disciples watched their master, their beloved friend, die, grief-stricken. They made it all up. They told stories that he'd risen from the dead because he was foolish enough to promise that he would, but he didn't.
Well, you know, that really wouldn't make much sense in view of the fact that these individuals ended up being tortured and then put to death as a result of their claims about Jesus Christ and his resurrection. Not only that, but they watched their own families be tortured and put to death as a result of this claim about Jesus Christ and his resurrection. It doesn't make sense that somebody would make up a lie and then defend that lie by going to their deaths. And for, you know, beyond that, if they were just lying, if they were just making the resurrection up, certainly the Roman authorities or even the Jewish authorities could have paraded Jesus' dead body around town, and that would have put an end to that. But they couldn't do that because neither the Romans nor the Jews had possession of the body because it had been resurrected from the dead.
All right, so that's where another alternate explanation for the resurrection, the claimed resurrection, comes in. And that is, look, the reason that the Jewish authorities couldn't just go to the tomb, exhume the body, and parade it around the street saying, look, he's really dead, is because the disciples beat him to it. They stole the body, and they hid it.
Well, you know, when you look at the historical facts, that one really starts to take more faith than the real account. The fact is that the tomb had a huge stone weighing several tons blocking it. There was a big Roman seal across it, and the violation or the penalty for breaking the Roman seal was instant death. This tomb was guarded by elite armed Roman guards who were trained in the art of defense and killing, and these were big and brawny guys, as opposed to the disciples. And the point that I am making is that this would not have been an easy to accomplish tomb robbery. Now, here's another fact to keep in mind. What about the state of mind of the disciples after Jesus was crucified? Were they bold and full of courage, or were they cowardly, and did they all scatter like a bunch of cowards? Well, the biblical account is that they scattered like a bunch of cowards. They were in no frame of mind to go against these big, brawny Roman guards and then break the Roman seal and push the stone away and steal the body. It just doesn't make sense that they would do that. And then on top of all that, Todd, we'd have to look at the noble character of these men. They were Jews, at least they started out as Jews, and they were raised in giving heedance to the Ten Commandments, one of which talks about bearing false witness and why you shouldn't bear false witness. It stretches credulity to say that these men would go against everything that they believed throughout their lives and pull off something like this.
Okay, you raised the state of mind of the disciples. We've got a minute here before this break, and that's been another source of an alternate explanation for what they would say is the alleged resurrection of Jesus Christ. Namely, they were so grief-stricken, so overwhelmed with the sudden death of their master, that they hallucinated. No ill intent here, but 3 days later, they hallucinated that he was back from the dead.
Well, in answering that, hallucinations are individual experiences. By contrast, 1 Corinthians 15:6 tells us that Jesus was witnessed by 500 people at a single time. I think it would stretch credulity to say that 500 people hallucinated the same hallucination all at the same time. Furthermore, the historical evidence indicates that Jesus appeared to too many people on too many occasions over too long a time, that's 40 days, for this view to be feasible. You see, there's just too many people involved, and therefore I think to say that it was a hallucination is simply to grasp at straws.
All right, then when we come back, maybe the alternate explanation for the resurrection, the skeptic, the atheist, the agnostic might propose, is not a hallucination on the part of the grief-stricken disciples, not them getting together and stealing the body, not them making it up, but maybe it was all kind of in Jesus' hands all along. Maybe he really did suffer, and maybe he really did almost die on that cross, and maybe they even thought he was dead. maybe even buried him. But sometime after being buried prematurely, the now revived Jesus, not dead, but simply swooned or temporarily comatose, you know, they didn't know the difference between death and coma in those days. He got up, dusted himself off, made his way back into the city, and then proclaimed himself risen from the dead to his astonished disciples, and they were stupid enough to believe it. Is that a good explanation? We'll get the response after this. Pastor Mark Schaefer, coordinator of continuing education and related events at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the importance of equipping the priesthood of all believers.
It's so important that, you know, the church, we have faithful pastors, but we also have faithful laypersons. The church can't exist without people. And the more that our laypeople understand their role and how they fit in the church, it's good for the church's mission, it's good for the church's service, it's good for the worship life of the church too.
For more information about the spring retreats at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, including one led by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. John Seleska, visit their website, ctsfw.edu, or call area code 260-452-2204, 260-452-2204.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production salaries and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172. Or you can donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Ron Rhodes is our guest, president of Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries based in Frisco, Texas, and author of several books, including his latest, Answering the Objections of Atheists, Agnostics, and Skeptics. Before we go to our calls here, Ron, let's deal with one of the final alternate explanations for the alleged resurrection of Jesus Christ proffered by those who doubt it, and that is the swoon theory. He didn't really die. They thought he was dead. They may have even buried him, but at some point he revived, dusted himself off, appeared to the disciples, said he rose from the dead, and they said, oh, sounds good to us, and believed it.
Well, let's consider the facts. You know, Jesus went through six trials, and he was beaten beyond description. He was so weak that he couldn't even carry the wooden crossbar, and he had to have someone help him carry it. Then huge spikes were driven through his wrists and his feet, causing massive blood loss. A Roman soldier thrust a spear into the side of his body so that both blood and water came out. And then four Roman executioners, who had many years of experience in their line of work, made a mistake and pronounced Jesus dead. After that, about 100 pounds of gummy spices were applied to Jesus's body, and during that time, nobody saw him breathe. A large stone weighing several tons was rolled up against the tomb. Roman guards were placed there, and a seal was wrapped across the entrance. And we're supposed to believe that Jesus awoke in the tomb, split off the garments, pushed away the several-ton stone, fought off the Roman guards, and then appeared to the disciples? I don't think that would make very much sense.
Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. We got a couple copies of Ron's book, Answering the Objections of Atheists, Agnostics, and Skeptics, to give away to our best callers. And we'll start with Ronnie listening in San Francisco on KFAX.
Ronnie, thanks for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you.
Hi.
Well, my question is, well, one of the objections I get from atheists and skeptics is, if God exists, why doesn't he simply reveal himself to us?
It's a good question. Ronnie, thank you very much.
Well, that is a good question. In fact, I believe it was Carl Sagan who said that if God really does exist, then why doesn't he just, throw up a golden cross up into the sky, you know, and just let it hang up there? Or maybe, like some of those Michelangelo paintings have this big hand coming down out of the sky. Do you remember the painting I'm thinking about?
Mm-hmm.
It's that big old threatening hand that would scare people into believing. Well, what about it? I believe that God has revealed himself. But the problem is that I think many people today, including atheists, have sort of the sense of entitlement. They feel like they're entitled to God making himself known according to their own specifications. In other words, if God really exists, he's got to reveal himself according to what I think would be good evidence. And the fact is that when you look at history, God has revealed himself, and quite overtly. In fact, if you look at both Old Testament and New Testament history, we find that there were four periods of self-revelation in which God did the most incredible miracles. And during that time, God always had prophets and apostles on board to record everything that was going on. And God deemed that that was his manifestation or revelation to humankind, and that those apostles and prophets were to write down everything that they saw, and so that that would be a future record for all the people and who would live generation by generation after that. You know, they would have a full testimony of what occurred. But here's the thing, Todd. Even back in Old Testament times and New Testament times, when these incredible miracles were being done, even when Jesus Christ was walking out, through the streets and doing all kinds of miracles, including raising people from the dead, there were still people who refused to believe in him. And what that tells me is that there are people out there who, even if miracles punch them in the nose, they're still going to refuse to believe in Jesus Christ. Such is the hardness of the heart.
So the
in some people out there.
So the basic response for Ronnie is, well, God has revealed himself. Romans 1, he's made himself obvious to everyone through natural revelation. He has revealed himself in a special way, a la the biblical record. The question is, do you believe the record that he has left of his self-revelation?
Well, I think that's it. I think there's another point that we can make, and this kind of relates to why God doesn't hang a golden cross up in the sky. You see, one of God's purposes is that God is sifting human beings to see whether or not they will take his moral commandments seriously. Now, even a robber or a thief who's walking down the street, if they see a cop driving by, if they see a policeman driving by, they're going to clean up their act real quick, you know, while the policeman is nearby. In the same way, if God had a cross hanging up in the sky, or if he had his arms just sort of hanging out of heaven so that people could see it on earth all the time, people would be threatened into belief. They'd be threatened into sort of feigning obedience. But the fact is that God is watching from a distance, generation by generation, to see what people do with his revelation. Will they accept him, or do they reject him? Will they follow his laws, or will they reject his laws? Will they keep his commandments or reject his commandments and live as a god unto themselves? You see, God is watching, but he's not going to watch forever, because there is going to be a day of judgment in which it will become too late. And at that point, if you have not made a decision for Christ, then you go into a Christless eternity, and it's too late for you. And so, personally, Todd, I think God's got a reason for not hanging a golden cross up in the sky. It has to do with his purpose, for humanity and for his sifting the moral nature of human beings.
Well, I just thank him that he didn't put a golden cross in the sky, but put a wooden one on the ground with his son on it.
Well, that's right.
And there is where Paul's saying, look, if he's been raised from the dead, and if this Jesus is who he is, then everything that he's revealed to us is worth believing. Let's talk with Chris, who calls from Wood River, Illinois, and listens on KSIV. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My brother actually believes we were implanted by aliens, and one of the things that he brings up is that our body is so intricately designed, and like everything has a total purpose for it, just like an engine in a car. If you take one piece away, the whole body doesn't work. And he mentions that, according to the Bible, it always sounds like basically God just breathed his spirit into us, and that kind of leaves it at that. But whereas if God's going to breathe the spirit into us, he wouldn't have designed, he wouldn't need to have put all these organs into our body to make us live, like hair on our arms and eyelashes and eyebrows and canine teeth and such. And also, I mentioned to him, well, if aliens created us, then who created the aliens? But he says that if they have the power to create us, then obviously they are before time as well, and they are eternal.
All right, Chris, thank you very much. An interesting alternate theory for the origins of man. A minute here before we go to our break, Ron.
Well, I believe that God created both the material and the immaterial part of man. And when God created the material part of man, he used DNA. And DNA is the blueprint for the human body, and it stores all kinds of information. In fact, each strand of DNA has so much information that you could store all 30 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica three or four times over. The thing is, where did that information come from? Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, said that DNA is like a computer program, but far more complex. Somebody incredible must have designed it. Well, the fact is that somebody incredible did design it, and it wasn't aliens, but it was rather God. That information from the DNA came from God himself. And so I think that what's in the human body is just one more evidence for the existence of God.
Ron Rhodes is our guest. When we come back from this break, we'll continue to take your phone calls and your email as we answer the objections of atheists, agnostics, and skeptics. 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We got two copies of Ron's book, Answering the Objections of Atheists, Agnostics, and Skeptics, to give away to our best callers and emailers. And when we come back, we'll also get to some more of the questions that are raised there, some more of the objections to the Christian faith that are so often and so commonly raised by the atheist, the agnostic, and the skeptic. Stay tuned. Dr. Dean Winthy, president of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the important work of Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief.
It has done a remarkable job of joining acts of mercy to the center of Christian theology, namely Christ and his saving work for us. There in the past has been a tendency to do one or the other, that is, on the one hand, to proclaim the gospel and neglect the very real human needs, or the opposite extreme has been to tend to human needs but not to bring the saving gospel of Christ to bear. And Pastor Harrison and his staff share with us the conviction that these two go hand in hand.
Find LCMS World Relief at our website, issuesetc.org, or call 1-888-930-4438.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again, talking with David Erickson, illustrator of our Issues, Etc. book of the month for March. He is risen indeed. It's a children's book. David, how do you illustrate a children's book that begins with Jesus' death?
I went literal. I just basically thought, well, where are they? Well, I think, from what I understand, they must have been in or near a quarry. And that provided for me kind of a good metaphor for the rest of the book. The illustrations in the first half of the book or so are cold and cool colored and not a lot of vegetation. And as we move toward Mary Magdalene meeting with Jesus a little bit later on in the book, everything changes. The colors are warmed. We have vegetation all around. It's just it provided for me, even though it was all literally conceived in my mind, it provided for me a very good metaphor or narrative tool to move throughout the story. You know, things are cold and dark and gloomy at first, and then when Jesus appears to Mary Magdalene, everything changes.
Okay, so talk about that resurrection scene.
I did do a little bit. I stuck a little bit with traditional approach. He's sort of in the light garment. He's not. But on the other hand, it looks like he's in sort of the sort of clothing that a guy in that time period would also work in. His sleeves are a little bit pulled up, and that's kind of how I like to think about Jesus as you know, he's always working for me. He's always at work for me, and a good way for me to convey that visually is to have his sleeves be kind of rolled up.
Finally, David, you know, the tendency in children's books is to sugarcoat the Bible stories, even the stories of Jesus' death and resurrection. So how do you avoid that as an illustrator?
It was important for me to stay literal. I didn't want to be too inventive. And I wanted to be pretty. I wanted to be straightforward and just paint straightforward clothing on these people. And that would be enough combined with the actual narrative to provide for an impact on the children who are listening as their moms and dads are reading this to them. It's just all literal, concrete illustration. There's very little fudging around with the illustrations. I try and be as straightforward as I can, and still have it be, you know, each painting, I try to make it visually interesting and pretty and so forth. But I want to be literal. I want to be true to life.
For more information about He Is Risen Indeed, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We had the caller before the break, Chris. Chris, stay on hold. Jeff's going to take your information. I'm going to send you a copy of Ron Rhodes' book called Answering the Objections of Atheists, Agnostics, and Skeptics. That's our topic here as we continue our conversation with Ron Rhodes, President of Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries. Let's go back to the phones. We'll talk with Tracy, who calls from Phoenix and listens on XM Radio. Hi, Tracy.
Hello. We're privileged to talk to you, Mr. Rhodes.
Well, thank you very much. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. My question is, I'm witnessing to my father-in-law, says he believes in God, says he has faith, but denies the exclusive claims of Jesus. What's the best angle to witness to him?
Good question, Tracy, and thank you very much for listening out there on XM Radio. Ron, here's a guy who's at the very least a theist, but he has trouble with Jesus saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me.
Well, I think that one of the points that you'd want to make to him is that there are many different competing religions out there that are vying for people's attention. But there's a big distinction between the other religions and Christianity. You see, in the other religions, it's always works-oriented. What I mean is that with all the other religions, they try to take bad men and make them better by ethics. In other words, by following ethical principles, people can become better and better so that they can earn salvation. By contrast, Christianity seeks to take people who are dead and make them alive. Big difference. You see, in Christianity, it is taught that people are born spiritually dead. They are separated from God because of their sin, and they need to be made alive. They need to be born again. And that can only come through the Savior, Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for human sin. And so I guess the point that I would make is that, number one, Christianity and the different world religions are completely distinct in that way. But secondly, Jesus went on to prove the truth of all that he said by doing something that no other religious leader did, and that is he resurrected from the dead, just as he promised. In fact, Jesus told the Jews, destroy this temple of my body, and I will raise it again in 3 days. And Jesus did exactly as he claimed he would. He resurrected 3 days later. So if I were you, that's the approach that I would take. I think that my book probably has a lot more stuff in there that could probably help you to to add some substantive argumentation. But I think that's probably where I would begin.
Here's Mike listening on KCCV in Kansas City. Mike, thanks for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. You guys are doing a wonderful job. I'd just like to say, and I just had a few points really quick. I used to be an atheist. I had a Holy Spirit experience here in Kansas City about 5 years ago, and I come from the Northeast. And I just wanted to say that there's a couple of reasons why someone might be an atheist and think that God should reveal himself to them directly. One might be because their lives are very painful and that they think they deserve it because of the pain and the things that they have gone through and others go through every day. And also, they may not believe in sin or that they are sinners and they don't believe that they need a God. And the other kind of Christian that I've noticed are those who really just believe in the physical world and they hang on to reality with things like evolution and things like that just to keep them steady. And just to be compassionate for all those people and just to really love them and reach out to them is really the best way to be a good example for Christ, spend time with them and just really witness to them in a really positive way and not get in debates, just like you said.
All right, thanks, Mike. Ron, let's deal with those one at a time if we could. You mentioned this a little bit before, that we need to understand why people believe, or in this case, don't believe what they don't believe. Often there is there is experience with church or with Christians or with family or with life that drives people to atheism.
Well, that's right. In this case, the caller mentioned, for example, that some people choose atheism because there's a lot of pain in their lives as well as pain in the lives of other people they know. And this kind of relates to the age-old objection, how can there be a good God if there is so much evil in the world? And, in fact, that's such an important issue that I devote an entire chapter to it in my book. And just to give you a quick answer, I often use metaphors to help people understand the Christian viewpoint on this. Let's suppose that an architect designs a perfect house. It's wonderful in every way. People move into that house and really enjoy it. 10 years later, however, there's a massive termite invasion. Does that massive termite invasion indicate to us that there was no architect of that house? Well, no, that would be silly. Do sloppy homeowners that never take out the garbage, would that prove that there was no architect? No, doesn't. What about arson? If the house burns down, does that prove there was no architect? No. Well, I think you can see where I'm going. God is the architect who designed the entire universe, and he designed it in a perfect way. It was just great. But then there was a massive termite invasion of human sin, which brought about all kinds of pain and suffering on this earth. But just because there was that massive termite invasion of sin does not mean that the divine architect does not exist. I kind of use an example like that, Todd, as a launch pad to talk about the theistic Christian worldview and how the existence of evil is actually compatible with the existence of an all-good and all-powerful God. There's a lot more to it than that. I mean, you have to read the book to get all the details. But the fact is that the existence of pain and suffering does not disprove the existence of God.
One other of the reasons that the caller mentioned, that Mike mentioned, why someone might be an atheist is the belief in just the physical world, just the material world, at least to some, makes sense of things. At least it's something I can say, all right, I put my eyes on that, I can put my hands on that, I can see it, I can taste it, I can touch it, and that to me makes sense. And that's why I'm an atheist.
Well, and a lot of people have held that viewpoint. I mean, they actually hold to the viewpoint that the universe is not caused. They basically hold that the universe and the world are eternal. But really, that's a philosophically impossible position. You can't go on explaining how this finite thing causes this finite thing, which causes this other finite thing, and so on throughout human history, because that just puts it off indefinitely into the past. No matter how you talk about it, no matter how many finite causes you line up in the world, eventually you've got to come to something that got the process started. So you can't really say that the world is eternal. And if the world is uncaused, and if it's not self-caused, then somebody must have caused it. So if I was talking to an atheist who held to that position, I would actually use that as a launch pad to talk about what's known as the law of causality. And, the whole idea there is that anything that had a beginning has a cause. And since the universe had a beginning, as science proves, then it must have been caused by something, and that something has to be greater than the universe, and that would point to the reality of God.
Listening on KLTE in Chillicothe, Missouri, here's Karen. Hi, Karen. Karen, welcome.
Hello?
Karen?
Yes.
What's your question?
How can I help you?
Yes, my question is, if people believe that individuals like humans evolved from a certain species, why wouldn't that be all alike, and how do you explain that Jesus was more powerful than other human beings, and how could that evolve?
Karen, thank you very much. It's a good question. There's the contention, of course, Ron, in macroevolution, that that all human life evolves from lower forms. How do the evolutionists deal with Jesus? What category do they put him in?
Well, of course, an evolutionist would generally be an atheist. In fact, it's been said that evolutionism has led more people to become atheists than anything else in the world. And in fact, evolution has been called the universal acid that erodes not just Christianity, but all religion. And so certainly an evolutionist would not even think of Jesus as being the Son of God or being divine in any way, but rather was just a human being who, you know, is related to the same ape ancestry that all of us are related to. So they begin from a position of, you know, imposing on Christianity the view that Jesus Christ was just a man and nothing more. In fact, most of them would say that there's no God, and most of them would say that there's no afterlife, and certainly they would say there is no sin, and if there's no sin, there's no need for a Savior. So it really all becomes a moot point.
Real quick call, and then we'll get the response on the other side of this break. Here's Lisa, listening here in St. Louis on KSIV. Hi, Lisa. Our time
Hi.
Is short.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for writing the book Conspiracy to helping to write the book Conspiracy to Silence the Son of God.
Oh, yes, with Tal Brook.
Oh, that is required reading. I lend it out to everybody.
Oh, good. Good to hear it.
What's your question, Lisa?
Can you relate these terms to the terms that you're talking about? Naturalist, humanist, and of course there's secular humanist and religious humanist, heathen, and pagan.
All right, good question. And on the other side of this break, we'll get Ron to deal with all of those terms and those issues, place them in their context. Ron Rhodes is president of Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries, based in Frisco, Texas. During this hour, we're giving away his latest book called Answering the Objections of Atheists, Agnostics, and Skeptics. And when we come back from this break, we'll also get not only a response to Lisa's question there, but also responses to your calls and to your emails as well. That book goes to the best caller or emailer in the rest of this hour, 1-800-730-2727, or our email address here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. So how do we sort all this? The naturalist, the humanist, the secular humanist? How do we deal with all these terms? Heathen? Pagan? Where does it all fit? Ron Rhodes is our guest, and we'll respond to that question from Lisa right after this break. 1-800-730-2727 or issuesetc@kfuo.org. The joyful cry of Easter, He is risen, He is risen indeed. The death and resurrection of Jesus Christ is the good news that stands at the heart of the Christian faith. And the story of His death and resurrection stands at the center of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. It's called He is Risen Indeed. It's a children's book, beautifully illustrated, telling the story of Jesus' death and resurrection for us sinners. You can purchase He is Risen Indeed from Concordia Publishing House, their number 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and find the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, He is Risen Indeed. The book is $12.99 plus shipping and handling. or call 1-800-325-3040.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Do Paul and James disagree on justification by faith? What did James mean when he wrote, "Faith without works is dead"? And if a person lacks works, what's James' solution? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. I've written an article for the Next Issues, Etc. journal on the subject of James and faith. We'll send you a free complimentary copy. Just call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. Issues, Etc. regular guest Uwe Simonetto has also written an article on the subject of racial segregation in the church, 1-800-737-0172. And the Wittenberg Trail feature details Pastor Robert Schreckheiss's journey from the subjective experience of Pentecostalism to the objective truth of the Reformation, 1-800-737-0172. Now, if you enjoy Issues, Etc., the radio show, you need to get the Issues, Etc. journal, 1-800-737-0172.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Before the break, we had Lisa on the line. She raised a number of terms, asked Ron for some definitions in the context of our conversation here. Let's deal with three of them in rapid-fire succession, if we could, Ron. The first one is naturalism or the naturalist.
Well, a naturalist is somebody who subscribes to the philosophy of naturalism, which says that everything in the universe has natural causes, and we need not appeal to the existence of a deity to account for the existence of anything.
What about
nature caused everything?
What about humanist?
A humanist basically says that man is the measure of all things. A humanist is a person that says that human beings are a god unto themselves. They have the ability to solve their own problems. They need not appeal to a deity in order to, accomplish what they want. Many humanists believe that man has the capability of bringing about a utopian society on Earth without any help from an external deity.
And then the other term that she mentioned was heathen. It's not a term that's often used in parlance nowadays, but what is it?
Well, a heathen is simply an unbelieving person, or it could also refer to an unbelieving nation. And, you know, very often the term heathen comes up, in context of, can the heathen be saved apart from Christ? You know, that question sometimes comes up. And, of course, the answer to that is that everybody needs Jesus Christ, and anybody who responds to even just a little bit of the natural light that God gives them, either in conscience or God's witness in the human heart, God will send more revelation. And I don't care what part of the world you live in, but God has a pattern of doing that. And, so these are all related terms, but they do have distinct meanings.
Dottie listens in Burlingame, California on KFAX. Hi, Dottie.
Hi.
What's your question or comment, Dottie?
My question is about carbon dating, how anyone could say something is a billion years old or even millions of years old when the oldest thing probably that they have dug up. I don't understand how they can say things are millions of years old when trees only have like 500 rings at the oldest.
Dottie,
well, that's
thank
a good
you very
question.
Much.
I'm not a scientist. I'm more of a theologian type, but I do a lot of reading. And one of the things I've discovered in my reading is that there has been controversy on this whole issue of different dating methods, including carbon dating. For example, some scientists have pointed out that the cosmic rays that penetrate the Earth's atmosphere can certainly affect the amount of carbon produced and therefore can affect the dating system itself. It's also been suggested that the Earth's magnetic field can affect the amount of cosmic rays that enter the atmosphere, which would thereby also affect the amount of carbon. Many creationists have pointed out that the Genesis flood, which was worldwide, would have greatly upset the carbon balance, and the flood buried tremendous amounts of carbon, which became coal and oil and so forth. And so the balance was upset in that way. And so bottom line is that many creationists believe that when they use dating methods that show the Earth to be, millions or even billions of years old, that maybe those readings are skewed by events that took place in the past. Now, again, I'm not a scientist, nor do I claim to be. But I think that there's good reason for at least a healthy amount of skepticism, just in view of the fact that scientists themselves are debating some of this.
Dottie, if you'd hang on the line there, Jeff is going to get your information. I'm going to send you a copy of Ron's book, Answering the Objections of Atheists, Agnostics, and Skeptics. And thank you for your call. Let's talk next with Aaron, who calls from Virginia and listens on WAVA. Aaron, welcome to Issues, Etc.
All right, I have a confession I need to make. I am an agnostic, but you said we could call.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I have to ask you, can God create a contradiction?
How do you mean that, real briefly, if you would, Aaron?
I think of Aristotle and the law of self-identification. A cannot be not A at the same time. And you can't really conceptualize or state in one way in that question because it's hard to give a material instance, you know, give an example of a contradiction because it's a contradiction. But
okay, Aaron, I think we get the gist of the question, and thank you very much for listening and for calling as well. Okay, if God is all powerful and he could obviously do anything by that definition, Ron, can he create an inherent inconsistency or a contradiction?
Well, I think that we need to look at all of what Scripture has to say about the attributes of God, not just his, you know, omnipotence or his ability to do all things that he wants to do. For example, we know that God is sometimes called the Spirit of Truth. And because God is the Spirit of Truth, all that he does is true. And God does not do anything that would violate the laws of, non-contradiction. For example, you cannot say, for example, one thing is true and untrue at the same time. That's the law of non-contradiction. We can also talk about the law of excluded middle. You know, we can say there is a God and there is no God. Both of those cannot be true at the same time. If one is true, the other is false. There's no middle ground opinion that can be true.
I think, Ron, sometimes even Christians misunderstand what is asserted when we assert God's omnipotence. There are many things God cannot do. He cannot deny himself. He cannot break a promise.
He cannot create a square circle, for example.
Things like that, but not because there's an insufficiency in him, but because he is true to himself, and he's true to, because he is the definition of truth, but he's not the arbitrary definition of truth. He is self-consistent. So I think that that's kind of a lot of this objection goes to a misunderstanding or a caricature of what Christians mean when they talk about omnipotence.
Yeah, I think that we often tend to sort of break God down into these little attribute categories as if God's got all these little parts, you know, that can work independently. But God is simple theologically, and what I mean by that is that God is spirit. He's one being, one essence. And when we talk about the attributes, we're not talking about little pieces of God, but rather we're just talking about different things that are true of this one essence that we call God, this person. And so, you know, let's keep in mind that God never does anything that violates any of his attributes, whether it's holiness or, reason, or whether it's omnipotence or anything. All that he does is perfectly consistent with who he is.
A quick final call here from Tracy, who calls from Oklahoma City and listens on KQCV. Hi, Tracy. All right, Tracy is gone. Ron, it comes down to this. The atheist, the agnostic, the skeptic. When we started our conversation, you said we should not immediately assume that we've got faith and then they've got all the facts and the intellect on their side. Finally, for our listeners, you said this is not always a debate between faith and, or as you said, facts and fiction or facts and faith. Your final thoughts?
Well, my final thought is simply that atheism itself is a faith system, even though atheists don't like to admit that. Atheists cannot offer definitive proofs that God does not exist, and therefore there is an element of faith in their viewpoint. Even the late writer Isaac Asimov indicated this. He said, "Emotionally, I am an atheist. I don't have the evidence to prove that God doesn't exist, but I suspect he doesn't." You see, so even he's admitting that atheism is a faith system. Now, the question is, which faith system has more evidence, atheism or Christianity? As I argue in my book, there is point after point after point that supports Christianity and opposes atheism. And I think that anybody that approaches the topic with an honest and open mind will come to that conclusion.
To find out how to contact our guest in this hour, Ron Rhodes and Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries, or to join our monthly donor program called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. You can also write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Here's the address again, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Ron Rhodes is a regular guest. He is president of Reasoning from the Scriptures Ministries, and he's author of several books, including his latest, Answering the Objections of Atheists, Agnostics, and Skeptics. Ron, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
It really comes down to truth, doesn't it? I mean, the last response there, that God is truth, and truth is, by our definition, from our perspective, that which corresponds with reality. That's the definition of truth, that which corresponds with reality, the situation as we find it. It's not relative, because there is but one reality. So when we say there is no God, we'd better be really sure that's true. In other words, that that corresponds with reality, not what we wish were true, not what we want to be true. Not what we would hope would be true, but what is true. What corresponds with reality at the very heart of all human history, at the very heart of the Christian claim, the person and work of Jesus Christ. It all hangs entirely upon him, just as he hung upon the cross for us, for all mankind, as our Savior. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen each week to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of Worldwide KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, Craig Parton, Dr. Gary Habermas, and I invite you to attend the 10th Annual European Summer Study of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. The Academy will be held July the 11th through the 22nd next summer in Strasbourg, France. For more information, check out the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org, or call our resource line number 1-800-737-0172, and we'll send you a free brochure, 1-800-737-0172. Improve your abilities to defend the faith and teach the truth by attending the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July the 11th through the 22nd in Strasbourg, France. For more information, call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, or issuesetc.org. We hope to see you there.